It was so insightful and motivating that I actually ended up filing for a leave of absence from work. The fears that are within my control versus the things that are out of my control, and then just give myself permission to rest, which also helps me prepare for this anxious situation. Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, where we share the underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Sophia, one of the co-hosts. Tyler and I have been doing this podcast for 3.5 years now, and I wanted to try something new for this episode. I wanted to see how it felt to do a solo episode about a book about mental health. We've done many episodes about mental health, our experiences with it, guests' experiences with it, what works for us. But I wanted to try a solo episode that's focused more on my reflection rather than a conversation about my reflection. So the book is Big Feelings: How to Be Okay When Things Are Not Okay. It's all about 7 emotions and ideas for navigating them. The emotions are uncertainty, comparison, anger, burnout, perfectionism, despair, and regret. This book was a great find. It validated some difficult emotions I've been feeling recently, and it helped me take some small steps to improve my life. I read this book because I love the Instagram page by the authors Liz and Molly. It's linked in the description below. We've actually shared a lot of their illustrations on our Instagram page, and many of you have also found them insightful. I also read this book because I have felt every single one of these feelings over the past few months, and I just wanted to hear stories about other people working through them. Recently, I've been really invested in learning how to improve my self-talk. Self-talk is not a replacement for talking with friends or with a therapist, but I figured I'm the person experiencing my life 24/7. I'm the one here for me 24/7. So it helps for me to know how I can put a pause to my trains of thought that are tearing me down, especially when no one else is around to help me in that moment. This book shares a lot of great ideas. I'm only going to share what stood out the most to me. And it has something for everyone. It has specific sections for folks who are working through these 7 difficult emotions as a parent, as a caregiver, as a manager, as a friend. Really encourage you to check it out if you end up enjoying this quick summary. The first difficult emotion is uncertainty. They lead with this really interesting stat that shows we would rather be absolutely sure that something bad is going to happen than deal with ambiguity and uncertainty. People who had a 50% chance of receiving an electric shock were 3 times as stressed as people who had a 90% chance of getting the shock. This is really interesting because it reminds me that your experience of anxiety could be helpful. It provides some valuable signals into what you care about and what you're trying to protect. But your experience of it or your magnitude of anxiety doesn't accurately reflect the risk, doesn't accurately reflect the magnitude of the risk. And this was really applicable to me as I was going, sometimes I was really nervous for big presentations or for meeting someone new or for a job interview. And the idea is that there's always uncertainty in these situations. And just because I'm nervous doesn't mean I'm unqualified or unprepared and that I have to put myself through 10 more hours of preparation. You know, so many of these things, so many of these situations inherently have an uncertain outcome. And so there's always going to be a baseline level of stress. And it just helps to know that I don't have to keep working until I resolve every single ounce of stress and uncertainty, because that's probably not possible. If you're like me and you experience a lot of physical sensations when you're stressed, they shared this really helpful tip. They say, if your anxiety in the face of uncertainty is so intense that sitting with it sounds unbearable, remember that strong emotions, like those that cause a physical sensation, they only last 90 seconds. So pause and sit with yourself, count to 90 before you react, or count to 5 and do it again and again. Another tip they had for navigating uncertainty is reframing negative talk. It can be so easy to say, I can't do this, or like, oh my gosh, I'm so lonely. Why did I do this? I can't handle being in a new city by myself. So why did I move? Instead, you can reframe it and say, I'm learning how to do this, or I'm learning how to settle into a new city. And I love that reframing because it reminds you of the progress that you're already making and showing you that you already are proving to yourself that you can do more of this good stuff that you're doing for your life. The next tip for navigating uncertainty is to list your fears and think about, for each one, is this fear within or beyond my control? If you feel responsible for things that are beyond your control, you will never be able to confidently say that you've done enough. This, oh my gosh, this is so me. I'm the kind of person who, like, in college, if I had an exam, I couldn't go to bed or hang out with friends or eat a meal in peace leading up to the exam because there's always more I can do to prepare for it. And this is such a helpful reminder to separate the fears that are within my control versus the things that are out of my control, and then just give myself permission to rest, which also helps me prepare for this anxious situation. If you still find yourself ruminating, another tip is to give yourself time, is to set a time to give yourself permission to keep thinking. For example, if you find yourself spiraling downwards and you just can't let go of these thoughts, try to tell yourself, okay, I can continue ruminating about this, but I'm going to take a break now. Tomorrow at 9 a.m., if I really want to pick up this ruminating again, I can do it at tomorrow. I also thought this is really helpful because you're not shutting yourself down. You're not telling yourself that you are being bad for ruminating, but instead you're giving yourself a break. Their last tip about navigating uncertainty is to develop self-trust, to reflect on the moments where you experienced uncertainty and came out doing pretty well. You can think about, when was the last time I felt unsure? How did I get through that? What did I do well? And what did I learn? The next difficult emotion they talk about is comparison. And this is definitely something that I do a ton, comparing myself to my peers, my friends, people I know, even people I don't know. So their first tip was to think about, what do I have in common with the person that I feel envious of? This really worked for me because I find that when I'm envious of someone, I try to think about all the ways in which we're so different, all the gaps, all the ways in which they're quote unquote ahead and I'm quote unquote behind. But when I think about what I have in common, it reminds me of my potential and it reminds me of the resources that I have that can help me get there if I want to get there. Like, hey, we actually went to the same school. We have a very, very similar network. We got to the same point in life at some point. At some point, we looked the same on paper, and maybe all those, maybe, you know, being from the school or being from this company or having this network and having these resources, if they helped this person get to where they got, maybe these resources and this track record that I have in common with them, maybe this can help me also get where I want to go. A second perspective that helps when you are feeling a lot of comparison and envy is that when you're looking at your friends and you see that they have so many things that you don't have, remind yourself that your friends might not want to burden you with their troubles or hard things that they're going through. And so your life might not be a ton different from theirs. A lot of the challenges that you face yourself, your friends might face as well. So there might not be so much need to feel envious or to compare yourself and feel bad. Their third tip was to befriend or reconnect with someone who has taken a very different life path. This is also a great tip because I find myself fixated on certain narrow definitions of success. But when I talk to someone who's a very different age or who has different values or perspectives, it reminds me that everything is so subjective and is so dependent on my environment and the values of the people around me. And there might be value to the things I have that I just didn't even realize just because people around me don't value them in the same way. And tip number four was, if you still find yourself really wanting something, great. You know, strong moments of envy or comparison might be telling you something about yourself. But the next step is to think about, do I really, really want what they have? And if so, how much do I want it? And is it worth taking action to try to get it for yourself? I find that when I start to feel that instinctive moment of envy or comparison, I only see what they have and I might not think about the cost of getting there. And I think when you reflect on that cost, it makes you more realistic about if that cost is worth getting what you think you want. Tip number five was really interesting. The author suggested shifting from malicious envy to benign envy. For example, if you have a role model who is really good at something, like really good at podcasting, really good at makeup, you can think about, hey, if my favorite role model stopped doing what they're doing, I wouldn't benefit. I wouldn't be able to enjoy their incredible work. Or another way to shift from malicious envy to benign envy is to think about, hey, I haven't done what they've done yet. that's still possible for my future. That's still something I can look forward to. A last tip about navigating comparison is to pick a broader baseline of comparison. If you see a friend hit a personal milestone, it's easy to feel like you're far behind in life. But if you think of 10 or 20 friends or acquaintances, chances are they're in the same boat as you and maybe happily sailing along. Emotion number 3, anger. There were so many good tips here, but the one that stood out the most to me was this insight that anger can increase our confidence and make us certain that we are capable and strong. And I love this reframing of anger, and I found it to be very true in my personal life as well. There are sometimes when I feel angry because I think I deserve something that I didn't get, and that motivates me to raise my hand and go for that opportunity or to speak up for myself. And that determination wouldn't have been there without anger. So yeah, I love that reframing and that encouragement to channel your anger strategically. The fourth chapter was about burnout. Oh, this is my favorite chapter, and it was so insightful and motivating that I actually ended up filing for a leave of absence from work, and I'm getting to enjoy that as we speak. There were so many surprising and interesting insights in this chapter. The first was, I didn't even realize that I was fully, deeply, extremely burned out. I thought burnout happened when you were tired from the volume of work that you had to deal with. But I've learned from this book and from personal experience that burnout has so much more to do with like the why of your work and less about the volume of your work. When I find myself doubting why I'm even working or doubting if I should even be in this workplace, I think that kind of foundation of cynicism or skepticism or doubt really made any amount of work, if it was small or big, any amount of work felt really difficult and unbearable. So this is how they define it in the book. Burnout is a chronic feeling of 1, exhaustion, 2, cynicism, and 3, ineffectiveness. Exhaustion means you feel constantly depleted. Cynicism means you feel detached from your job and from the people around you. And ineffectiveness means that you feel like you'll never do a good enough job. And burnout is not just a function of the number of hours you put in, but the stories you tell yourself about work and how you approach work. And then they shared some signs of burnout, and every one of these, I was like, oh, whoa, that's me. 1, basic activities, like going to the grocery store, feel overstimulating. Yeah, that was me. 2, you find everything and everyone irritating. Yes, also me. 3, getting sick and being forced to shut down sounds nice. Yeah, I was really sick for 3 months, but deep down, a part of me was really relieved to be sick. And I was like, that doesn't sound good. But I think there's something there's an emotion I need to look into there. Another sign of burnout is revenge bedtime procrastination. It's when you stubbornly stay up late because you didn't get any time to yourself during the day. That was me. I would like finish work and just feel like I spent this whole day doing things for other people rather than doing anything that made me happy. And then I would stay up late doing random things and then feel exhausted the next morning. And this cycle of exhaustion would just continue. And then the author shared a really interesting tip for establishing and communicating your boundaries. And that is to create and reference a rule. For example, when someone asks you to do something, you can say, I have a rule that I don't book social events on Thursday nights. Or I have a rule that I always sleep on it before making a decision. This works because people tend to take no less personally when it's tied to a quote unquote rule. People respect rules and accept that it's not you personally rejecting the offer or the demand, but this rule just leaves you with no choice. So I thought that was a pretty clever trick and idea for establishing your boundaries. The next chapter is all about perfectionism, and I experienced this so much too. I feel perfectionism about so many random things that it just leads me to procrastinate and feel angry with myself. So one idea for navigating perfectionism is to first explore where you learned that you were not enough. Where did you learn to set this expectation for yourself? What is your perfectionism try to protect you from? Or if I meet this expectation, will I actually be protected from what I fear? Another reminder they share is that a lot of things that are worth doing at 100% are also worth doing at 20%. For example, exercise. If you set a goal to exercise 5 days of the week, even if you don't exercise those 5 days, even if you only exercise for one day, that's still one day's worth of health benefits that you get to experience. This actually related to this other podcast episode that I listened to all about building a workout routine. And they had this experiment with two groups of people. The first group held themselves to a more rigid expectation, which is, I will work out 5 days a week at 9 a.m. in the morning. The second group had a very similar goal, but they removed the expectation or the rule to exercise at 9 a.m. in the morning. And interestingly, they found that the second group actually found more success in establishing a workout routine. And at first, this was really surprising to me because I thought, oh, I expected that this specificity of building exercise into your routine at 9 a.m. in the morning, I expected that to help you establish your routine. But that specific rule was actually kind of unhelpful because people found that, because oftentimes people might, you know, oversleep and miss that 9 a.m. slot and then feel like, oh, it doesn't count if I exercise at 5 p.m. So if I just missed it this morning at 9, it's not worth exercising later in the day. But that's not true. Exercise is valid at any time of the day. Your rule might just need to be the thing that needs to be changed. So yeah, that perspective also helped me push back a little bit against my perfectionism. The next chapter is all about despair, which interestingly, there was the clinical definition of despair wasn't created until 2020. And it includes feeling hopeless, having low self-esteem, feeling unloved, worrying frequently, loneliness, helplessness, feeling sorry for yourself. And one of my favorite tips from this chapter actually came from a reader. The reader says, setting even the smallest of goals and achieving them can help. Washing your face in the morning, picking up medication. If you're having trouble getting started, it might help to put yourself on autopilot. When I had no energy to do anything, I pretended I was a character in a video game. This type of distancing technique can reduce the intensity of your emotions and make it easier to take action. Video game me had to take a shower, so I just sort of watched my body turn on the nozzle and stand there. And then eventually my mind caught up and realized that the hot water felt good. I tried this and it really worked. There's something about stepping out of your body and just pretending you're a little video game character and just being like, hey, let's have video game Sophia step into the shower, or let's have video game Sophia open her mail and look through her bills. Something about that really helped me move forward in small things and feel less bad about myself. All right, the last feeling is regret. And this chapter breaks down regret in a lot of different ways. So one way they break down regret is to think about how what you regret depends on what part of yourself you're tapping into. You could be tapping into your actual self, which is who you are right now, or you could be tapping into or optimizing for your ideal self, which is the truest, most fulfilled version of you. Or you could be optimizing for the ought self, the you that would check off all of society's boxes. And they found that when you optimize for your ideal self, that tends to lead to the most long-term happiness, even if there is a little bit of a decrease in short-term happiness. Another helpful way to break down regret and really pinpoint exactly why you're feeling regret is to think about the 6 categories of regret. So one is hindsight regret. You made the best decision that you could back then, but now you know more. Type 2 is alternate self-regrets. You have a vague sense of regret that comes from wanting to live different lives. Number 3 is rushing in regrets. You made a decision that you weren't sure about or weren't ready to make at the time. Number 4 is dragging out regrets. You waffled about a decision for a long time, even though you sort of knew what you needed to do. Number 5 is ignoring your instincts regrets. You had a gut feeling that you weren't making the right decision, but acquiesced to others' needs or opinions. And number 6 is self-sabotage regrets. You made a decision that you knew wasn't good for you, but you did it to protect yourself from feeling another emotion, like rejection, loneliness, or vulnerability. Ooh, this was so interesting. And I Of all of these six types of regrets, I most often feel dragging out regrets. Like, why did I drag out this relationship rather than ending it sooner? Or why did I drag on telling my friend how they hurt me? Or why did I drag on leaving this job? Why didn't I do it sooner? And the tip for this type of regret really resonated with me. The tip is to take a strengths-based approach. Instead of telling yourself, "Ugh, I should have done X earlier," you could say, "I had the strength to do X no matter how long it took me." And this reminded me of our conversation with Melisa, actually, about defining your job requirements and sometimes not getting what you want in life and feeling a little bit sad about that. We talked about how when we worry about X or regret X, it stems from the assumption that X would lead to the most happiness or success. But that's never a guarantee. Life plays out in so many unexpected ways, and sometimes dwelling on regret makes it harder for you to remain reasonably hopeful about how things can pan out well for you. So that was my reflection on the book Big Feelings, all about these seven difficult feelings that many of us grapple with and some ideas for navigating them. If you want to hear more of Tan and I's conversations about mental health and grappling with difficult feelings, I have some episode recommendations for you. The first one is episode 178, Let's Get Motivated, 15 Tips. And then we have episode 188, Defining Our Job Requirements with Melisa. And then episode 182, Encouragement for a Hard Day. That's where I go through some affirmations that I've bookmarked for myself and that I like to revisit when I'm having a hard day. And episode 173, Your Guide to Making Stress Your Friend. And lastly, I recommend episode 191, What to Do When You're Lost and Uninspired. There you have it. I hope you enjoyed this episode and found the summary helpful or comforting in some way. If it did, think of a friend who might also enjoy learning about this book and let them know that we are on every podcasting platform. If you enjoyed this episode and want to make it easy for others to find this episode and get the encouragement and help that they need, you can make that possible by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts on Spotify and Spotify. This helps because your rating helps other people discover our podcast and get to enjoy these tips from this amazing book. If you want to start a conversation about these hard feelings and you're looking for a way to start that conversation, you can also share this episode with a friend that you want to start this conversation with. A lot of our listeners tell us that sometimes they feel some type of way and they don't want to say it directly to a loved one, but then they share an episode where we kind of put that feeling into our own words, and that has helped them start a hard conversation that ended up being a really great conversation. So that's another idea for you. And with that, thank you again for joining us. If you have any other books that you've always wanted to read but haven't had time to read, and you would love for us to do a quick summary of it, let us know. I would love to hear what books are on your mind. You can DM us on Instagram or on TikTok at Bamboo and Glass. All right, thank you for tuning in, and we will talk to you next Sunday. Bye.